Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. Now, just picture this. That's what's going to be today's Home Run discussion. You are the current Minister of Finance. That's Madam Erica Shifuda. You come into that ministerial position and find out that you actually have sort of like restricted with regards to things that you can do when it comes to expanding your expenditure, more like your expenditure basis in terms of take, for example, everything basically including development. And that's not something that I realized until, Shoban pointed it out. That, for a very long time, when the expenditure and the revenue is not balancing, what you do is you just go out there and borrow. Except when she comes into office, that borrowing has now, the debt to GDP has gone nearly 70%, and SADC has sort of like
has a 60% mark.
Yeah, has a 60% mark.
So, I only discovered also that SADC has this broad. But I think it's because of the economic integration that SADC is wants to achieve.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Or like on a SADC level.
SADC has that plan, Hamoud. That's the beauty of SADC. SADC's integration. Multinational integration.
Yeah.
Is better than the AU approach.
The AU was very important when the wind of change was blowing across the African continent. But now that the wind of change have shifted from economical to the political one, and that wind have sort of like lost momentum, if you ask me.
But it was mostly grounded on Pan-Africanism.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what's his name? Gaddafi passed away.
Yeah.
Gaddafi was sort of like the last vestige.
Like he was very invested in Pan-Africanism.
But his Pan-Africanism was also like, make Libya the important part, the important country.
Yeah.
Because the ideas are coming from me.
At least the guy wanted to make Libya and the important part. The president of Cameroon wants to make Switzerland the important part.
The president of who?
Is it the president of Cameroon wants to make Switzerland?
Cameroon? Is it Cameroon's president?
I think that's the Cameroonian president,
Wait, Helmut, what were you saying? Who wants to make Switzerland the important part?
The president of Cameroon.
Yeah, I was hoping you would mention that guy, but okay.
What? Look, he's famously known for that. Look,
everyone knows him.
I think that was last year when disappeared from public eye to the point where, allegations of his death started flying around. He had to come out and clear things out.
Then he was flown to Yaounde just to be shown I'm still here. Owe didn't say a speech or anything. He just landed. His wife led him by the one arm. Other officials of the government led him by the other arm.
They should have left him, because after he came out of that hiding, he started running for office again. I think they should have just left him in there. Coming back to our, today's Home Run discussion, which is going to be based on the 2026-2027 national budget analysis, but this is not a Home Run Eagle FM Helmut and Dwight analysis, albeit it's low-key that. It's basically based on Robin Shobon's, analysis of where he just looked at more like in detail, because he's been analyzing, both professionally and, as you can imagine, from his personal point of view, based on experience and stuff, the Namibian economy since pre-independence.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how long he's been president.
No, he actually.
With the IPPR officially since is it 2000 or 2001?
Okay. He said he started IPPR.
Yeah.
He has worked for the Namibian government with National Planning Commission.
Yeah, the National Planning Commission.
And he's been part of the first ever drafting of Namibia's actual budget.
Namibia, not Southwest Africa, Namibia.
Namibia's own budget. Because he's been here.
The first ever.
was it 1992, 1993 that he mentioned? And then he's worked with National Planning Commission. Technically, obviously, he's now a naturalized Namibian. For those Namibians that, in one way, because I also have that detail to me, we sometimes get a little bit of xenophobia, you know. We go say, yeah, what are these foreigners doing? And then you realize, okay, this person is more skilled than me. Let me just stand in the back of the room, you know. Let me not complain. But we actually need more skilled people. Not to deviate from that, but it's how they get deployed, where they take positions, and obviously all that particular scenario. That is a digression that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But when you look at his particular knowledge,
yeah,
with also the book that he wrote that you and I both own a copy of, the knowledge that
he didn't say he's updating it. I'm looking for it.
But he's updating it more on his website. The website by the same name.
Yeah.
So he continuously updates things that way. There is a book that he showed there.
The one he said
about
it's
the mining sector, the diamond mining sector.
The one he said is not available now. And I was like, okay, now why did he even bring it up?
Exactly. Which is even worse because the concern that emanates that I've highlighted many times, and I've asked him this. I don't know if you heard my Q&A that I asked him.
Other regions.
Not just the other regions, you know, the decentralization question. Because I love throwing this.
The Namdeb one?
The Namdeb, the diamond mining one. Yeah. Why do we keep making mention? And he even tabulates in his analysis. He tabulates the diamond proceeds there as well. But my question is, we've already satisfied and proven, yes, you can see this is what the government gets from, let's say, proceeds of the previous financial year of diamonds that were sold in the international diamond market. But why is the diamond proceeds a state secret versus where we see tax refunds? You can even go, Helmut, and go look at who paid tax, where, when, you know, under the Access to Information Act. That's what the act empowers you to do, with its own limitations and restrictions imposed on it because of obviously the discussion of the right to privacy that individuals and entities can enjoy. But the bigger question from this is we highlight once again income or revenue streams, and income and revenue streams are not, you know, we don't get much concern regarding or much information regarding why is the stream there. Now, for many people who were trying to champion the discussion of Namdeb's, not Namdeb, what's the diamond business that owns the stake in Namdeb, the 50% stake in Namdeb? De Beers. The discussion of De Beers's up for sale entity because Anglo-American is it Anglo-American? What's the holding company's name? But anyway, so De Beers is
Anglo-American.
It's Anglo-American, because Anglo Gold doesn't exist anymore, I think.
Those are the English and Americans.
Okay. The overall question that popped up at the start of the year was the sale of De Beers, but we didn't know that De Beers was actually, is it De Beers? Yeah, the De Beers Group. That it was up for sale for like 2 years. We only started hearing murmurings, and then I started seeing people sharing about Namibia and Botswana possibly trying to enter into a partnership to buy the entity, which would make things sketchy, already sketchy. Why? Because who knows what, which government official knows what happens on the international diamond markets, which is the bigger concern regarding this. It's the exact same. Actually, let me put it like this. It's the exact same thing that my father told me before he passed away regarding the metals, precious metals and metals. That copper truck that drives from Zambia through Namibia to Walvis Bay, where is that copper going? That copper is not going to a marketplace in Windhoek. It's not going to a marketplace even in Johannesburg. It's not even going into a marketplace in Luanda or even in Abuja. It's nowhere on the African continent. So this means who buys and sells the copper? The copper is being bought by what's the guy's name? That billionaire from Italy, from India, Lakshmi Mittal, who owns the Mittal smelting company. Lakshmi Mittal, Helmut, is so rich. He lives in the Billionaires Lane in London, which includes one or two Arabs from the Middle East, which includes a whole bunch of other billionaires who have bought mansions in London on the same street. It's actually known as Billionaires Avenue. It's on the same street.
Jeez.
So for someone from a developing country who knows the value of the market, the advanced economies and the developed economies, why would you have the same market buying and selling copper in Namibia? That is the question that no government official, no economist in Namibia has answered. They kind of cannot answer it, Hamoud, because it's the same thing that you see when you go to the shop to buy your favorite lettuce or your favorite broccoli or a cabbage. You name it.
Yeah, Mkavango, we don't do broccoli.
I had to bring up the broccoli. I had to bring it up.
Just had to.
So when you go to the market, ne? And that's also how some people, they love inventing words just to differentiate the marketplace that they participate in from the agricultural market or the basic consumer market that we interact in a lot. Even Helmut, when you have to try and rent a place, you enter the market, meaning you went from one position into another position. What was your previous position? Your previous position was that you had your need met. Your needs were met. Now that you realized, okay, I want a better place. I'm earning a little bit more money, or my budgeting is actually helping me in having a little bit more flexibility. Let me try and find a better place with better parking, with a better view. Let's say it for that matter. Or let's just say it's just more well structured in a more quieter neighborhood in Windhoek. That means you change from one position, one status into another status. Now you're getting back into the market. You're looking for this particular item that has to solve a need. Till today, 35, 36 years later, economists will never explain to you, Helmut. They will use lofty terms because I didn't study economics. I only had economics one A and one B at NUST. They will never explain to you, bring the market here. But I was taught in marketing, develop the market.
Don't import it.
Exactly. The basics from marketing is there are three philosophies. There's a marketing philosophy, there's a sales philosophy, and there's a production philosophy. Now, marketing philosophy is actually the middle one. It uses a combination of the sales philosophy and a combination of the production philosophy to have the marketing. Meaning, understand what the customer wants, so that you know you're making the right thing for that customer's need. Then go and ask the customer after they've bought the thing from you that you made, why are you buying this thing? And if that customer tells you, because I needed a storage place that could both protect my perishable goods and actually also extend the shelf life of my dairy products, of my fresh produce like my fruits and vegetables, and also for other particular perishable products, for longer periods so that I don't spend so much money having to buy fresh products every day.
Yeah.
Which is, what am I describing? A refrigerator.
Yeah.
Now, the moment you as the market then come back with that market knowledge, which is intelligence, market intelligence, you then enhance the product offering, meaning, okay, guys, let's try and put on some bells and some whistles. Let's try and put on some fancy lights and colors and stuff like that. Let's make it more ergonomic. You know, if the door doesn't slide open and probably falls off on the side, but no, or you could completely detach. No, you actually have it swing open, or it actually folds while swinging open, or it actually, you know, has a little cuckoo bird coming out at the top, telling you at the top of every hour, there's a watch on it, on its face, telling you this is the top of the hour. Potentially not being an eye impaling object, you know, but rather more like being an actual safe, you know, possibly safe element or feature to include on a fridge. Those particular things, Amun. But you're not hearing that discussion in Namibia. Do you know who actually took things from a basic perspective and actually got something going? I don't know if you remember the cooperative between the three cattle farmers, I don't know how far from Ondangwa they are, but our colleagues in Ondangwa actually covered that story back in 2024, 2023, no, 2024, about the butchery that they opened up. The three farmers. You remember the partnership story? Yeah. The three farmers. That is what we need. That is what we need. We need mercantilism or mercantilism. The word mercantilism means the spirit to do business. The ability to trade. The ability to be innovative when you see, okay, let's try and make our own thing. That is not what Namibia is doing, Helmut. So far, and that's the reason why I constantly challenge the idea of why do we need to know about the diamond income, the diamond revenue? And lo and behold, the minister, like I said back when we did the budget analysis, you and I, when we did it literally on back in last month, we literally said the same sentence, or I said the same sentence. Why, like clockwork, she mentioned once again, diamond revenue was down.
Yeah.
So why must we know about something that has been down for 5 years in a row? Why? Because someone decided to go and, what was that thing? Do research and development in synthetic diamonds.
And they nailed it.
And they nailed it.
Competition is fierce.
And now everybody sees and knows now how to make synthetic diamonds. And now we're trying to break, the last strategy that I heard was that we're trying to break into the Las Vegas diamond scene. But the Las Vegas diamonds, the Las Vegas tourism scene is down. So that means because of Donald Trump's own internal immigration policies, it is impacting the tourism market, meaning it's a depressed market, meaning Las Vegas is suffering.
So the performance is not as, it's not going to be as good
as you would have expected.
Yeah.
Now here's the other concern, Helmut. All the Canadians have boycotted the United States. Let me say it again, as a tourism destination. All the Canadians have boycotted
and those the United are the neighbors.
States. Exactly. The Mexicans are still, you know, obviously doing their thing because they've got jobs across the border in southern the United States because they commute every day across the border between Mexico and the United States. But we have to look at the geopolitics that that informs even our budget decision. There's going to be another geopolitically influenced discussion happening this Friday. The Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy sent out a notice just now inviting the media about a possible price review in April.
Who didn't see that?
And just last week when I asked the ministry people on the WhatsApp group, it's why are you guys silent about this 3 week war? Everybody else is saying there's panic buying happening in the country. And what was and remember, the minister gave a speech the Thursday.
Yeah.
Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu decided to go and play, you know, Lego Wars on Saturday.
Yeah.
Before that, we got an ad break, guys.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real. Just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Welcome back. A minute past the hour of 5 before, I almost said before we continue, but were we?
Yeah, so.
That's before I come in with the, you know, with the, you know, with something basically new I learned about this whole SADC thing.
Yeah, so the concern obviously is yes, Mr. Sherborne obviously also did his thing, particularly in terms of looking at the wording given. He highlighted in summary that there was a lot of maneuvering happening. I'm also not actually using the word from the article that I wrote last week based upon his particular analysis. The maneuvering is there, yes, but I will leave the rest of the maneuvering in the rest of our discussion for today. The other concern that I'm highlighting once again with regards to when we look at the revenue discussion, the revenue discussion is obviously what's going to happen in the development budget, meaning what will be allocated for the decentralization discussion I've focused on for the past 4 months, 5 months actually, from October, and how will this actually manifest? And that's primarily where I rested for now. But we are not doing market development. In no way are we doing it.
We're not doing it at all.
We're not doing it at all.
Oh, okay. I thought,
and
you know,
a Peugeot discussion is not market development.
Because
the idea is you've got to sell the thing that you're making. Just like you go to the shop today, Hamun. If you go to the shop today, if you're looking for rent or you're looking to change from one rental spot to another rental spot, that is you participating in an actual market. And no one has gone and told the mining companies, the smelting companies from around the world, the shipbuilding companies, the car manufacturing companies, let's try and build things instead of playing Lego with Peugeot parts.
Now, look, the whole Middle Eastern, you know, Israel, US, Iran situation is like it was pointed out in that presentation that it's going to cause some like unintended adjustments to a lot of projected numbers that were made, you know, and this is especially with regards to economic projections. Yeah. And if you look at, you know, if you, one of the example that was, one of the example that was given also in the presentation was the, you know, the predictions that were made.
The economic prediction
and how they kept changing.
They continuously revised.
No, it's going to be, you know, we're going to see this level of, you know, of increase in, you know, in revenue, or this increase in revenue. Next thing you know, you saw was that the predictions were becoming lower and lower. And now, that means, you know, it's also, I think one of those pros, you know, there are pros and cons of being part of the global market. And this, like what's going on in the Middle East right now, is one of those things that we really don't have control over. But regardless, it's going to negatively impact us. Hence the whole, you know, hence the whole discussion of you know what, there could be some changes in prices of different commodities come April. Now, everyone that was basically following what's going on in the Middle East saw this coming. You'll only be shocked if you are not following it, because if you have, you know, first of all, you have two things that's actually terrible here. You have the strait that's basically, you know, is a giant bone of contention, as we speak. And, you have the infrastructure that supplies global, your global oil market. That's being blown to smithereens. So, first of all, there is a lack of supply to what's being produced, and the production, you know, the production infrastructure is being blown to bits. Obviously, this is going to cause a shock.
Hamoud, let me take you back to your second point. Blown to smithereens. Currently, right now, when you and I did Professor Jiang's analysis last week, the biggest fear that I told you that we still have to see is the boots on the ground, the invasion force by the Americans.
Yeah.
Now, the invasion force, the boots on the ground, plays part of his sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah.
Sunk cost fallacy, guys, is, for example, imagine, you remember, I don't know if you watched the movie Too Big to Fail, the one about the 2008 financial crash. About the banks.
I've seen a lot of documentaries on financial crisis, but the movie, I've heard of it, but I've never seen
it. So the movie has the same name, and the documentary has the same name, Too Big to Fail. Too Big to Fail means...
I've only seen it was an inside job.
Yeah.
But that's largely based on, you know, on Ireland.
One, Oh, yeah, on Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the concern that's going on here, that the actual concern I'm sitting with, is Donald Trump invading Iran. That is our concern today. Not them shooting each other, playing tennis with rockets. You know, let's see who has the best spike or the best, you know, under bottom hand, bottom spin.
Yeah, but look, one thing is like bombs flying, which are, they're already flying. Yeah. Those guys, you know, you see, I totally agree with one lady that that pointed out that this, you know, what's going on in the Middle East for basically both Israel and all the Arab countries and throw, you know, basically all the Arab countries in that region. They're forgetting one thing from, you know, when it comes to this whole conflict.
Mm.
They're literally in a desert. So if they start blowing up their desalination plants.
No, Iran is blowing up their desalination.
How long can they both keep up the war without water? That's the question.
The thing is with Iran does have surface water in Iran.
So Iran can keep up without water.
Actually, Hamoud, Iran has got forests and woodlands and green
mountainous. Yeah. Like that's one of the reason why it's almost impregnable.
Do you remember when we did the why is Iran trying to offer steel to us discussion back in 2024?
The discount. I really like that deal.
So when we looked at that, one of the resources I looked at was a website, a tourism website for Iran, Visit Iran. And I looked at the website and I was like, this place is green. Place has rivers. This place has surface water. This place has glaciers, you know, mountain water that flows from glaciers in its mountain range.
Yeah, but I don't think Saudi Arabia and you, basically UAE can say that.
No.
So
there's one half of the Middle East that's cooked. They're busy cooking because they don't have surface water to work with.
Basically, if their desalination plants are disrupted in any way.
Yeah.
And you have to understand both an oil refinery and a desalination plant. This is a multi-billion dollar piece of infrastructure. You put an ICBM on that thing.
Mm.
You know, you can blow it up in minutes. You can't build it up in days.
No. No.
So now.
You are right, Hamoud. No. And that's been the biggest concern so far.
Yeah.
Because just imagine how quickly a country would capitulate with no water.
Oh, no, that'd be.
And people think usually it's about who's got the biggest fist.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually like the dumbest part, especially coming out of the Trump administration. And they think because we have the biggest army, we'll just stroll in there and, just start blowing stuff up, which they have the capacity to do. But here's the thing. What Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam, all those places are what? Like rainforests?
Mm.
So water is everywhere, except this in the Middle East. Now, all these things obviously is going to change a lot of, economic projection numbers, not just for Namibia, but for the whole world. And, that also speaks to us.
Mm.
That means this, it's the worst time to be a minister of finance and president. So now, when it comes
and I'm actually realizing now, Hamoud, the minister's speech was actually useless.
What do you mean?
Because of this conflict.
Oh, yeah. It really shoves a fork in there.
I mean, even just for us to talk about the discussion of the budget, we have to literally see what inflationary pressure will come from fuel scarcity.
Yeah.
And fuel shortages. Because the South Africans are complaining already about supply shortages at service stations.
Yeah.
And yes, the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy last Friday brought out a quick statement. We had that statement in Monday's The E-Paper.
Mm-hmm.
One of the colleagues wrote an article, a small industry brief about it. And then just yesterday, with the West Air Group, who owns Fly Namibia, brought out a price increase for a fuel surcharge. They call it a fuel surcharge. So you can view it as a price increase in essence to the impact of the Middle Eastern conflict. So we're already seeing it.
Yeah. We're just not talking about it.
We're just not talking about it.
Now, you are the current Minister of Finance. Put yourself in that poor lady's shoe. And now you're facing several issues with regards to the money available to you that you're able to basically work with.
Do you know who's in the pressure? Not her.
The president?
No, Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy. It's his ministry that has to go negotiate the prices. It's not the Minister of Finance.
It's not
Madam Shafuda. It's Amutse.
I'm picturing it from Shobon, because from the look of things, he's partly asking questions that he feels like were not answered in the minister's speech with regards to the, you know, with regards to the Namibian economy. That's one. Two. And he's also, you know, Mr. Shobon is also low key, I think, you know, looking at the current Minister of Finance and saying, you know what, considering the economic circumstances, she's tough.
Mm.
Yeah, but that was before the whole Middle Eastern chaos, where...
2 days before the Middle East.
Yeah, two days.
2 days before Saturday, yeah.
Exactly. Now, look at it this way. You come into office where you don't have the luxury of your predecessors of borrowing, where you have, somewhat expenditure shortage. You don't have that luxury because the ceiling have been pushed a little too high. So you have to work out a way to basically, fund programs that are developmental and local and basically everything that needs funding to keep a country afloat. And also two things. One, not to go and borrow because the ceiling has been pushed too high. And also two, not to make a mistake that a lot of other countries Mr. Shobon did not want to mention, who upon discovering, oil and gas in their country, they decided to go on a borrowing spree, saying that, you know what, did you hear that we just discovered oil? I mean, just give us the money. Don't worry, we'll pay it back. Yeah. Now, the point is...
Which is the other thing.
Yeah, we don't want to be that. Now, the thing is, I think we could be that. Chances of us being pushed into a corner of being that are really high.
Mm.
Now the public debt and the public debt and the protocol on finance investment coming out of SADC, the one that has that 60% debt to GDP, ratio type of ceiling, it turns out it's a whole protocol they have, and the annex two of that protocol dictates that in order to obtain all the they have all these a lot of things that they have here that we'll cover on the other side of the break.
Celebrate Namibia's Independence Month with amazing deals at Exodus Investment CC. Get solar lights for just 100 Namibian dollars. We also stock CCTV Wi-Fi cameras, TV mounts, DSTV and GoTV satellite TV accessories, plus replacement remotes for TVs, air conditioners and many other electronic accessories only at Exodus Investment CC. Visit us today at Shop 7, Black Chain Shopping Center in Katutura, next to Bank Bentuk. We are open daily, including public holidays, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. for your convenience. Call or WhatsApp 081-3191-395 and find us on social media. Exodus Investment CC, your trusted store for quality electronics and accessories. Hurry! Our Independence Special runs until the 30th of April 2026. And remember, Exodus Investment CC. We courier countrywide. Call us now.
Hot dogs. I love hot dogs. I wonder why it's called a hot dog. I can eat them day or night. Let's squeeze some tomato sauce on this bad boy and enjoy. Ah, no! Now I've got tomato sauce on my dog, my watch, and my favorite shirt.
Sometimes you just squeeze too hard, and your favorite shirt gets ruined. But luckily, with Express Credit's easy payday loans, you can get up to 9,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Welcome back. So we continue from where we left off after, you know, paying the bills. We are 17 minutes into the hour of five. If you just stay tuned in, this is a home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Now, annex two of the public debt and protocol on finance and investment coming out of SADC, paints the following picture that in annex two of the protocol of finance and investment, SADC recognizes that, microeconomic stability is fundamental to economic growth throughout Southern Africa, and as such, encourages member states to adopt policies aimed at fostering such stability. In particular, the annex advocates that the member states strive to avoid increasing in their debt to GDP ratios. In pursuit of objective of this objective, the annex also encourages member states to monitor and measure this ratio as an indicator of microeconomic convergence, especially taking into account the stability of the debt. In order to obtain these microeconomic convergence targets, member states are advised. It doesn't seem to have any legal reprimanding mechanism to it. That member states are advised to maintain a public debt to GDP ratio of no greater than 60%. We are almost at 70.
Yep.
You know what? All of a sudden, I don't feel jealous about, you know, not being the Minister of Finance, and because that's one heck of a headache. Because you can't borrow. You can't borrow because, well, you have this SADC protocol and the debt is just seriously too high. Mm. And two, you can't borrow based on the discovered oil because, well, basically, you're just playing hard to get. And also, you don't want to be one of those countries. I think it's also the precedence that has been set when it comes to, like, borrowing based on a resource that's still in exploration phase.
Or a resource that's still stuck in the ground.
I also don't know how that borrowing works.
I don't know how it works. Like,
but
it's desperation on a whole another level.
It seems to me that's what happened in Mozambique.
You're not supposed to mention any names.
I'm mentioning names, dude.
Yeah, but
names.
Yeah, but Shevin also points out that once the whole final investment decisions have been made in Namibia's oil and gas industry, then we are most likely to see some kind of some degree of growth to this whole some of that are based on a tangible, more like a provable numbers. But the thing is, it's not happening tomorrow, to quote his words. It's happening in about, about 10 years.
Well, we also know that it's 10 years from now, 2034.
Yeah, just pointing that out because, we more often run into people that think it's happening, it's just 2030. I'm like, okay, you know what? It's an 8-page document. 8 pages, that document. Just 8 pages.
Mm.
All you had to do was find it.
Mm.
How do you find these documents? Look, if you can find someone without their clothes on the internet, you can find a document. Like, it's not rocket science, guys. It's not hidden.
And then you find those that actually just go through X.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
There's a lot of immature people on X. I'm this close to deactivating my X account.
I don't remember when last I used the X, but
that account is just, if it's not AI things, then it's just weirdos who are telling you, follow me on my Telegram account. I'm like, nah.
Yeah, no.
And then the moment you click that link, you find it's a whole weird account with weird things.
Yeah. And I'm not following anyone. Look, I've gotten a lot of invitations to, to Telegram, but most of them have to, they're selling you these dreams of, just invest this, you get this.
No, I was almost hacked through my phone, through Telegram.
Because
they copied the account of someone that I actually know in my phone book. And then they resend you the re-download link for Telegram. I just, uninstall this thing. Uninstall this thing.
Yeah.
Which should show anyone else that Telegram doesn't seem to be as safe as it makes, because it tries to compete with WhatsApp, and it's technically not.
No, I think that's part of the problem. The safety part of it makes it, you know, has a sort of like a pros and cons. The good thing is, the traceability is not easy compared to other social media platforms like WhatsApp and Facebook, or basically all the Meta platforms, really. But, that also like, that, somewhat over engineered security features compared to other platforms, makes it a hiding, you know, like a breeding ground.
It's over engineered.
I mean, the guy is Russian. If you can imagine, maybe even the source code is coded in Russian.
Yeah.
Now, so that, those security features also, it's the same thing that you see with, you know, with browsers like Tor. Yeah. It's the security is so tight, but when the security is so tight, it also makes it a breeding ground for, you know, for malicious actors.
No, you are right.
Yeah, now, because they're not very easy to find. They're not very easy to trace.
Yeah. Now, the concern, obviously, with having a knowledge-based society in Namibia is what kind of knowledge are we generating?
Yeah.
Now, Helmut, it's bringing us back to point one where we started in our introduction phase for this afternoon. We don't have the markets that are associated to the primary sectors specifically of mining in Namibia or on the African continent. Even South Africa is divorced from the rest of the continent with its mining activity because the South African economy is linked to the global primary resource or minerals markets of the world through the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. But in Namibia, it's a different contrast. Do we have, it's not entirely the same thing, but here's what has happened in South Africa. South Africa has the likes of, what's the guys that also have a, not Mittal. Yeah, it is Mittal. It's that guy, Lakshmi Mittal. He had a South African subsidiary, up until last year. You remember the company that wanted to withdraw out of South Africa, who could potentially have seen an impact and labor force impact of 100,000 jobs in South Africa being lost just because of that one smelting plant in Newcastle outside of Durban. And the concern from the CEO of Mittal South Africa was that the recycled, technically circular economy, once again, the recycled metal coming through from China and from these recycled metal works in South Africa that are importing and producing affordable metal, repurposed metal products for the economy, which is the steelmaking economy, the steelmaking sector, the further manufacturing sector of the country, so on and so forth. But when you look at the conversation that of what was the pressure point for Mittal South Africa was they wanted more concessions from the government. They wanted more subsidies from the government. And obviously being instructed, this is what happens with multinationals in South Africa. They then go and say and make an accusation to the government. Yeah, the government didn't want to support us because of these and these. They actually wanted to bully the rest of the economy in their favor.
Multinational corporations have that tendency.
They do. Helmut, they do. We still have to do the discussion about the investment guide, the investment guides.
Oh, yeah.
There was a Namibian who actually said, laws, regulations are wonderful for multinational. Laws and regulations are the worst thing for you and me as a Namibian who wants to start a business. Now, I've never heard an honest opinion which is based upon facts and data points from the Namibian economy in a long time. And this is from a lawyer, Helmut, who deals with commercial entities, who deals with the Namibian economy. Not a lawyer that stands in front of the courts. A lawyer that helps with registrations, business advice, business consulting, you name it.
Yeah.
And he highlighted this. This is Mr. Johan Cronier from Cronier Incorporated. He highlighted this. And I actually thanked him. I said, thank you, Johan. Thank you for saying this. For saying this and that I could record it. Thank you. Thank you for saying this. And he said, he doesn't know why, because in the audience, it was Namra's boss was also there, Sam Shifute. And Sam tried to sort of like take, try to defend an image of Namibia from a public sector's perspective. But the thing is, you can't defend Namibia's business friend, business environment, or how easy it is to do business in Namibia from a public sector perspective, because you're just processing applications. You're just processing paperwork. You're a paper pusher. So why are you trying to defend a perspective of Namibia from a public sector perspective?
Yeah, paper what?
A paper pusher, Helmut.
Making it sound like a drug dealer?
Hey, at least I'm not using, what's that guy that was with LPM, who used that other word for the deputy speaker in the previous parliament, and everyone was like, it's, why was this word being used? At least I'm not using that word.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to use it on air, guys. Don't worry. Don't worry. So, being a paper pusher from the public sector does not mean you actually know what's going on in the public sector. This is one of the bigger concerns, Hamud, about Namibia's actual ecosystem of the private sector. How robust is it? How resilient is it? Our resilience and robustness can only come through, Hamud, if you have a manufacture a plant that manufactures t-shirts. If I have a plant that manufactures trousers and shorts and jeans, who else can we use as a colleague? If France has a manufacturing plant, I'm just using it as an example, France. Don't worry. Well, it's just an example. If France has a manufacturing plant,
France, Paris, or France in Angola?
France in Angola, okay. Yeah, our colleague. Yeah. If France has a factory that manufactures a screw, and let's say Abigail has a factory that manufactures a specific kind of a screwdriver to help turn that screw for a factory that, let's say, David has in Walvis, mm-hmm. that is an assembly plant for all these locally made things, meaning the factory workers in his factory buys the trousers, the safety trousers I make. His factory workers wear the shirt, the safety shirt that you manufacture. Mm-hmm. His factory buys the screw that France manufactures. His factory buys the screwdriver or the what's that other thing's name? The wrench, mm-hmm. the particular wrench that has to turn the screw from Abigail. That is what we're talking about. And that's also what the UN guys from the Conference of Trade and Development highlighted, that Namibia needs to identify immediate pathways of diversification close to the primary sector. But once again, here's the biggest crux. Develop the market. Meaning, if someone is mining the copper there in the Grootfontein combat area, someone's mining the copper there, ne? You must have the copper smelter, but before that, we've got a short ad break.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Your bank would never try to convince you that we are legit. We already know you. If in doubt, hang up and call us on 061-299-1200. Bank Windhoek, a member of Capricorn Group.
29-26, home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So to build a more like a resilient economy, you need to look at not just one product, but the entire supply chain that fits into you making that product.
A yes and a no. Meaning, let's say, if you're talking about the final product.
Yeah.
Sure. Yes. If you're talking about what happens between where the product is taken out of the ground and how you see the thing in the shop.
Yeah.
that's not the supply chain. That's the actual channel of value addition. Supply chain would be, how does the product get from the manufacturer of the final piece to you in the shop? I'm sorry, Hamid. Sorry for being a little bit, you know.
Technical
in that regard. Because we have to look at what happens between the mine, where the copper ore comes out, and how you get a TV.
How the copper is smelted and then refined and then shaped into different.
And the various industry representatives that buy from that same consignment of copper ore that was smelted, refined, and now had been repurposed. Because there's a business after the smelter.
Yeah.
There's a business that actually makes various kinds of products, meaning they make
copper. They take like power cables out of it.
Yes. Let's say just copper strings for power cables or certain copper brackets and stuff for circuitry in circuit boxes. Yeah. Or someone else then buys a specific batch of copper that they need to make, let's say, pieces of an electronic circuit board in order for, you know, conducting various light signals on a cell phone, stuff like that. That's what we're talking about. That is what Indonesia held
Apple
hostage for back in 2024.
Yeah, I remember that one.
That is not what is happening in Namibia. And no one is satisfying that discussion, Helmut. No one is satisfying that discussion. Even to the point where we actually have got guys here. Yes, you can see the entrepreneurial endeavor. I heard recently there was a sparkling wine launched by two, I'll call them celebrities for now. And the name sounds catchy, but you are launching a sparkling wine for an informed market. Look, launching a beer is just a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you would find beer connoisseurs in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
people will tell you, nah, man, I don't like that brand and I don't like that brand.
Yeah.
Besides obvious brand loyalty. But you can see the immediate particular sort of like potential or non-potential for product if the moment you go into the other alcoholic products. So who are you launching a Namibian sparkling wine brand for? Who are you going to compete with? Are you going to compete with Moe and Chandon? Are you going to compete with JC Leroux? An established South African brand?
No, it's JC Leroux.
She's South African, toch man, Helmut. She's from Johannesburg.
You have to say it.
I'm not going to say the French way, Leroux.
You have to say it with the French.
Because in Afrikaans, that R, which the Germans and the French have,
uh-huh.
we call it Afrikaans, we call it Brei, which in Afrikaans, in Namibia and in South Africa, it's identified as a speech impediment.
No, look.
But in France and in Germany, it's actually a romantic thing to your speech way. So if you come there and you actually pronounce the R in French and German, you'd be actually be seen as a disabled person because you don't have the R.
Well, look, the thing about the French and that you know, sound is makes every product expensive. And if,
is this the Jabu and management?
Is this
the Jabu situation Trevor Noah?
One South African guy said, if you want to, if you want something to sound expensive, just say it with a French accent. Yeah. You didn't, if you buy something from Mr. Price, just say you bought it from Monsieur Price. Yes.
You are actually right, ne? Because this was a joke that Trevor Manoa made about management. He said, we have to do this management. And then apparently all the South Africans are like, ooh, Pierre, you're so lovely, Pierre. But when Jabu shows up, he goes like, we have to do the
management.
No, Jabu, it's management, Jabu, it's management.
All of a sudden, I've been corrected. So, see, you didn't buy something from Ackermans. No, you bought it from Ackermore.
Or AC Kermans. That was the one joke a colleague I had said.
Now, how the heck did these guys colonize us?
Now, do you see the problem, Elmo? Do you actually see the problem? So now,
you are competing with
known names.
Yeah, you are competing with big guys that are already in the industry,
pretty established names, and they actually.
So you are looking at it from the angle of what are the odds
of you actually being successful? Yeah. Meaning survivability. Yeah. Meaning being
longevity.
Resilient. Longevity. Now the concern of Helmut would have been, did you make the thing yourself? Which actually would bring in more support for you. Meaning, you can go to a bank and tell the bank, listen, this is my distillery. And this is where I grow my grapes. Or I buy my grapes from the guy there on the other side of Omaruru.
Yeah, he's reliable.
And he has a harvest of this much every year. Or I buy from the Ausenkeer grapes guys on the Orange River.
Yeah.
And they produce this much grapes continuously. Now, the concern from that, Helmut, is are you pressing in Windhoek to achieve that bottled product? Or are you rebottling from something? Rebottling is a weak strategy. Because the guy making the actual thing will tell you, okay, because of Trump deciding to play Rocket Man with Iran, there's going to be 100% hike up in my transportation costs.
Yeah,
not in my manufacturing costs.
No.
Just in my transportation costs, because I am buying the said grapes also from, let's say, Ausenkeer. And Ausenkeer's people are under pressure because now the loans they took from their bank has gone up by 20%. Because the bank is now realizing, oh my goodness, the world probably might not be here tomorrow.
Because
there's a whole bunch of people with nuclear bombs in that equation in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So that is the particular pressure. Now, we're still not factoring in. What would have been the picture if 28 February did not happen? Saturday. The 8 o'clock situation. When I was told democracy is being delivered to Iran, I was like, what? On a Saturday morning?
Look, all Trump had to do was not fall for it. But then again,
But he did fall for it.
Yeah, he did fall for it. That's why, guys, look, my point of view on this is, if you are planning on being a career politician, stick to people your age. Because, people will start making videos and start blackmailing. But anyway. Back to the
what is that?
Epstein files.
It's not even that. It's not even that. It's the actual allies. If you're going to be a career, if you're going to be a national politician, that'll be an international face.
Yeah.
It's the kind of allies that your country is associated with. Here's the concern, Helmut.
Yeah.
I don't know if Namibia, because no one was also scrutinizing Namibia and its relationship with DRC, because you and I highlighted right here, DRC is the reason why we were stuck in the 90s in a world war, meaning a continental war, because it involved 8 countries in that conflict. After Mobutu Sese Seko, between him and Laurent Desire Kabila,
yeah.
Namibia was involved in that war as well. Namibia, South Africa, Zimbabwe. We were involved in that war. So we have to analyze literally and weigh up who is actually a legit bona fide ally and who just wants to use us so that we fight for them. But that's what the Americans are not doing. That's what everyone has known. That's what Jeffrey Sachs has been telling everyone around the world, The Economist.
Yeah.
That's what John Mearsheimer has been telling everyone around the world. If you're an ally of the US, God be with you. If you're an enemy, you're even safer.
I think it was Henry Kissinger who said, it's dangerous to be the enemy of the US, but being a friend is fatal.
Exactly. Because.
I think
it's even the comment that you made yesterday. Don't have a military base in your country.
Don't have a military base in your country.
But a US military base.
Turns out it's not as safe as, it's always, put out to be.
Yeah.
I think one thing you can basically draw from that is, first of all, nothing beats diplomacy. Nothing beats diplomacy because, military confrontation at the end of the day, both sides lose, even if you have the biggest army, because, you know, the US has the biggest army, the biggest, you know, military equipment, the biggest technology when it comes to basically everything warfare in this conflict. But, they are paying the price because the PR war, the PR part of this war is already won by Iran, even in the US. Because you know, all you just have to do is find any video, whether it's coming from BBC, CNN, CNN, Sky News, read the comment section, and they are all very siding with Iran. And at this point, you can see that whoever, you know, made the final decision of this war, whether it's, it was Tel Aviv or Washington, they didn't consider a lot of things. Maybe it's because of the whole, you know, religious, you know, wacko point of view on the whole subject of, you know what, let's just go there and do this for God. But come on, the entire idea of colonialism, especially, you know, the entire idea of modern colonialism as in a transatlantic slavery was based on what? Just go there and civilize. The idea they used was civilize, go and convert them, you know, convert them to our Lord and Savior. And then they actually caused some of the worst chaos under the sun. And when you look at the Knight Templars, for example, they went to do what? To spread the word of God with a sword, and then committed some of the worst chaos, and basically, you know, played, they were very instrumental at establishing modern, you know, the modern, you know, banking system. Yeah. But the point is, for a very long time, our species, aka human beings, have always killed each other in the name of your God is better than, I mean, my God is better than yours.
Okay, yes, Hamud, as a species, but I think that's a select demographic. You know, it's there, it's right there.
Yeah, it's right there.
It goes, it runs literally from,
he's talking about white people. Look,
not just them. Those guys there in that neighborhood around Jerusalem. I mean, that neighborhood of nations.
The thing is, whether I like it or not, there are a lot of things that both Tel Aviv and you know, both Tel Aviv and Washington did not consider. Now I don't like actually using the, you know, that sentence, like they did not consider, because these guys are surrounded by you know, the best of the best in the academic world of everything political and economics, and they are surrounded by also think tanks. They saw this coming. If they did something dumb, it was intentional for whatever end goal they have in mind.
Yes.
Yeah. No. And first of all, let's see what Donald Trump thinks. And he's not running a house, he's running a country.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real. Just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun Patkos and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley, hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Ega meno jomau yere lego komarungura, kalishia shike upsa kadi opa uteknika, oliriwo omkundu opa shiguana, upsa kadi opaliko, no hashivuro okuya moshipara uhupiro uongeshefa. Oshinimomtumba wa Namibia International Cyber Security Conference and Exhibition omvoma ovigaji miongo mbalina hamano, iikondo epangero mahanga no opa umwene, uministeri wepangero ni ikondo ya yoroka no handimwe, onetamu isanwa, muhoroke komtumba omtitatu watumburu wa mete tekero esiko milongo mbali naga ali siko mbali naga nega apiriri mwavigali milongo mbali naga mano ekaroko Arembush Travel Lodge Movenduka oshiparashi kundathanwa okuanja gane kuyerele kombinga ukoshoki wopa ungomba ano saiba hejin kena una okuironge kithira omashongo wako marungura no marongo kekopopeko jerongitho jomarungura na iru inji koneka omahangano ohandimwe ni kondo mbokata mkatu maa kaliripo ya konda pantu ya tano otamukapewa ompi ito Hasho yom tugumwe awedwa pong. Hasho ashikeshoka. Pethimbo yom tumba wotungoka. Otakuka karao VIP Cyber Gala Dinner. Nuyere lonji wa maisha angiso no mapura apuro. Kwatatha na nayo. Konraje tatu imwe. Onda tuyatano. Omgoiheali. Nenge ko email. info@dstech.com.na. Nenge. Utarele pwe panja jao jopa ungomba. Ko www.dstech.com.na. Namibia International Cyber Security Conference and Exhibition, Securing Namibia Digital Future.
Welcome back, but before continue, let's take a live read.
Velvica University for the 2026 January applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education for the following programs. The Certificate in Project Management Level 5, the Certificate in Supply Chain Management Level 5, the Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, Diploma in Supply Chain Management Level 6, Diploma in Project Management Level 6, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, and the Bachelor of Project Management Honours. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvica University, where everyone is an achiever.
Now, all you have to do is look at all the projections that have been made, economic projections, whether this is on a UN level, African Union level, Namibian level, SADC level. And consider it to actually understand that it's going to, a lot of things is going to change. It's going to have to, you know, chances of a lot of things changing with those projections are really high because of, you know, someone made a terrible decision to basically decide to go to war. And what, you know, look, I totally agree with Mearsheimer when he says that after that whole, you know, like just one night government overthrow and kidnapping of a sovereign nation's president in Venezuela, they thought, you know what? Actually, we can do pretty much whatever we want.
Mm.
Yeah, and they thought that maybe either kidnapping or killing the president is going to descend the country into chaos because, that's what happens. It's going to send the country into chaos and then they will just capitulate and the war will be over. Except it turns out, Iran, which is basically the oldest country I know, they have rock solid power transition structure in place.
It's not just a rock solid power transition in place, Helmut. It's also that they had a front row seat to what happened with Iraq. And I actually forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's what Professor Jiang outlined. The Iranians saw for 10 years what happened to Iraq.
They actually, they know that the US prepped Saddam to give them a hard time.
Yeah. So the Iranians have a front row specially downloaded, internet service provider level, front row seat of chaos of what happens to your country. That's what happened to Iraq. And according to, the academics around the world, is their view is that Iran is still not stable. Iran was almost taken over by ISIS here just before COVID.
Yeah.
And ISIS was the guys that were literally tortured in the Iraqi prisons. So Iraq has been unstable for the better part of almost 30 years now. So we are still sitting with this issue, or they are still sitting with this issue, and no one wants that issue anywhere in their neighborhood. The unfortunate thing is,
economically, it's going to reach you.
The Americans think the Venezuelans have forgotten. The Venezuelans that were shouting and cheering and were happy are the people outside of Venezuela. It's not the people in Venezuela.
Nope. Yeah.
It's not the people in Venezuela. I'm really sorry. There have been so many reports about the kind of leader Maduro was. But if you've got a majority electorate base that keeps voting you in,
mm-hmm.
That means your process is working for you and the locals.
The question you have to ask yourself is, how bad do you think you are if people are avoiding you to be with someone you are describing as a dictator? And that's why I don't like to throw these words around, because
we now often, we now see actual dictators.
Yeah, because we can look. The whole thing is what Trump is doing. If any president was to do that, you can imagine the labels that would be flying out of CNN and Fox News right now.
Oh, no, he would call them fake
the
news.
Labels will be all, I mean, South Africa was just, based on pure fabricated news of a white genocide.
Which was a lie. It didn't Big even exist.
That one.
And it was a guy that just decided to make a PR stunt, plant a whole bunch of white crosses along the road that leads to his farm.
Say what?
The road leads to his farm. It's a farmer that did that PR stunt.
How much money was he given? Because that's the common denominator I've come to learn about these things.
So the concern from there, Helmut, was a concern of look at the facts. Are they facts? That's why I always focus on facts and on literature. If someone comes and tells me something just at face value, does not mean I have to believe the person. That can be a politician, a bureaucrat within the government structures. I've learned if it's not in black and white, I will not take your face value, your words as is.
I think that's that should be the case for basically everything, not just something that, you know, like political economic analysis.
Yeah.
Everything, including, you know, just the stories you're being told by, take for example, one friend, especially if they got into a fight, for example, of, you know, they are disagreeing over a specific, you know, over a certain something or someone.
And you should always see the lies.
Yeah, it's actually important to look at both sides of the story. And unfortunately, it's, for a lot of us, we just, we pick a side before we, you know, before we get the information, instead of getting the information, and then comparing and contrasting before.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's why you start, if you look at the, you know, that's why I said, what Trump is doing, if any other president was to do it, you'd look at the language that would be coming out of the Western media would be insane.
No, they're still using that language.
Yeah.
For example, somehow they don't have an issue with the people of Iran, but the governance structure, the governance style of Iran is authoritarian, is brutal. So what has been working for the Iranians for the past 60 years? Is brutal in your eyes sitting in London?
Look, I have one question. That was Robert Fisk's point of view.
Yeah.
When he was, because he was, I think he was a war correspondent for the Guardians during the Iraqi, 2003?
Yeah.
Yeah, Iraqi
the invasion,
war.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, the whole, Bashar al-Assad, you know, Bashar al-Assad, that was parts of Syria, that all that part have also been engulfed in, like, you know, armed conflict for a very long time. He used to send, like, you know, information that he was gathering as a journalist, you know, to London. And for most of it, he was telling, you know, the bosses in London were telling him, we can't air this because it's, you know, we have to respect the dead. And Robert Fisk was like, look, you didn't respect them when they were alive.
Mm.
You gladly send bomb to come and blow them to bits. Now that they're dead, you have to respect them. Can you help me wrap my mind around that?
Mm.
And the language is, you know, language is very important because, you know, the Iranian is a regime. The American is a government.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Regime government, which is why there's one in the Iranian professor that basically made me realize that it's just something that I think have been, you know, flying across my subconscious. And I think that's the most dangerous part about it. That because in every interview and he, you know, I don't even know why he accept these interviews because they end up very, you know, very, very annoying, you know, with the Western mainstream media.
Is it the Al Jazeera guy? Is the guy that sometimes gets called in by Al Jazeera?
I think so. You know, he comes in with specs. I think he's Iranian. He's a professor. And every time that he talks about Israel, he keeps referring to Israel as a, you know, regime.
Mm.
I'm like, Okay, these are two interesting words, because when you listen to Western media, what you're hearing is that Iranian is a regime, but every time you listen to that guy, he likes to, I'm not sure about the US, but mostly Israel, the words he used was a regime. I mean, like, so the language here then is very important. Mm. You are a government and someone else is a regime, because they said no to doing things to your way.
To your style of governance. Which is a big concern, Helmut, which actually shows you self-determination doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't.
Self-determination.
Not for countries without nukes, it doesn't.
And self-determination somehow is under threat the moment you say, I want to determine my own destiny.
No, that's it. That has been the case.
And last night I heard because I only saw it this morning, but last night I heard Lula da Silva, the Brazilian president, was talking about the new colonialism taking place, specifically how the various critical raw minerals and materials agreements once again speak of what I just explained at the start. No one is talking about establishing a market here. It's just continuously shipping. It's just shipping. So, and in many cases, that's why I said, for example, the comment that the Namra boss tried to defend regarding the other comment that came through from the private sector, the guy from Kronier Incorporated. And they're both Namibians, mind you, dear listeners. They're both Namibians. But one Namibian sees one reality and another Namibian sees a different reality. And for the first time, I loved it. I cherished it. Now, the downside is a public servant tries to defend Namibia's, what you call it, ability or what is the ease of doing business in Namibia. But if someone who's a lawyer in the commercial aspect of seeing company registrations and the hoops and the red tapes and the levels of bureaucracy and then the extended lunches and sick applications or sick leaves that SOE officials and government officials take, which actually hampers your application process for you to just register a business and to get things filed with the relevant authorities, how that gets protracted before you can actually operate, that is the exact picture, the exact reality that I loved. I loved it, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the concern. It's most the public sector in Namibia that does not understand that they need to work faster, because in the private sector, we know that time is money. Even just responding to an email, time is money. Even responding to a phone call, time is money. But in the public sector, they don't think that way. They don't. Even today, I came from an event earlier today, Nehamud, where I was asking...
You realize they're going to kill us after this.
I don't care. I don't care. I sat there thinking, why is this government agency not here? It's one government agency.
Mm-hmm.
That is having a discussion about this particular subject matter. I'm keeping it all under vague terminology. But you continuously see that there are things not adding up. It was about intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know we had an intellectual property national strategy or national policy that ended in 2024. Not even NCRST's people knew that something like this existed. I'll say it again. Not even I have heard that we had a national intellectual property strategy that ended in 2024. It only ran for 3 years, from 2021 to 2024. It was supposed to start in 2019, but because of COVID, 2019 and 2020 was literally,
Was it put on hold or completely suspended?
Yeah. But then from 2021, they tried activating the thing, meaning they tried to finish certain particular requirements or conditions for Namibia to actually adopt this intellectual property discussion and how it can have a profound economic impact in Namibia.
Yeah.
But for 3 years, Helmut, for 3 years, only today I hear about that we had something like this. And supposedly there was a report. And like I said, there was another government authority that did not know of this strategy.
Just how?
which brings you back. And they literally, they even identified.
Who didn't know?
I met the PRO from NCRST then. And she also highlighted to me, but our people, there is one of their people there.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, does that person know? Or is it just the PRO person that did not know? But the PRO person also said, but we also didn't hear about something like this.
Yeah, they really have to communicate. Like they're all working in isolation.
The silo operations of our SOEs.
It's going to have, it's going to become a developmental barrier.
I even asked one of the PIPA officials at that event. Yeah, because it was a PIPA event. Do you guys produce industry data? Or do you just produce an annual report? Now, an annual report is boring. Industry data is up to date. It's flexible. It shows you trends that are happening. And then they sat there thinking first about my question. And then I asked, do you just produce an annual report? Yeah, it's just an annual report. But what do you mean about industry data? Business closures, business registrations, business openings, which sectors, dynamic things. You show dynamic details, which helps to tell.
Like in real time?
Not just in real time. Even in the annual report, you say agriculture, and these are the sectors under agriculture that saw business registrations and business closures. Then we can know. But now, I did miss this one experiment also one time on one industry WhatsApp group. Where can I find out about business closures, business registrations? Like data sets.
Yeah.
Then I was told, go ask Bank of Namibia. What does Bank of Namibia have to do with business registration? What? Helmut, what?
Just go to Bank of Namibia. They will tell you, go and ask BIPA.
Get to BIPA. You must ask the PRO. The PRO will just look at you like, blink, blink. What, Dwight?
So working in silos, that was a good analysis, an excellent one from the Office of the Auditor General.
They're also highlighting it in their own analysis that I came from today. That's also the same scenario. But that's the biggest concern, Helmut. Why? Because the NSA's Act, the National Statistics Act, and the National Statistics Strategy, the National Strategy, is that all these agencies are supposed to disclose data sets to the NSA so that the NSA can justify their work. I'll say it again. They all, from ministries, offices, mm-hmm. and agencies, need mm-hmm. to disclose data sets to the NSA so that the NSA can do its work. They are not. Guess what? We are only hearing from the NSA. Who was the biggest trading partner of our past 3 months? What were the trade statistics this month? Who was doing what this month? Zero. Municipalities are still not disclosing construction compliance mechanisms or construction discussions.
Yeah, last time I checked,
or what you call it, plan approvals, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. So, bottom line is, whatever economic plans we made, this was an unforeseen circumstance for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, the consequences, have reached us. We're just not talking about it. But sooner or later, we are going to have to talk about it. That means, that means being president, minister of finance, mines, especially mines and energy, because it's their industry that's basically, that's mostly impacted, because transport, everything requires transporting for it to move from where it's produced to the end consumer.
Mm.
And for that to take place, fuel is needed, and that fuel is the one that's being threatened.
Exactly. And the unfortunate thing is,
but don't worry, Trump is negotiating with the Iranians.
Supposedly, while shipping 3,000 more U.S. Marines in close proximity for an excursion. Since Putin was using,
special military operation.
Exactly. You know, these guys are so wonderful.
I know, they're very creative with words.
No, it's just an excursion. An excursion is, I'm just walking there in the bush,
It's not a war.
I'm just bushwhacking a bit. And I come, the bushwhacking comes an assault rifle and, an F-35. Noch nooit. Forget about it. But on that note, guys,
yeah,
let's see each other again. Same time, same place. Let's stay tuned for the next program.